Classic Business with Michael Avery, sponsored by Alex Forbes, for insight, advice, and impact.
Well, after our somewhat spicy exchange at the Sarepa conference last week, but all in good humor, Pick n Pay's latest interim results have landed, and they certainly tell a story of a retailer that you could say is still deep in surgery, but at least no longer on life support. Headline losses narrowed to 52 cents a share, thanks mostly to the debt slashing, recapitalization, and Boxer's continued outperformance. But the core supermarkets, it's still tough, bleeding to the tune of 621 million in the 6 months. So let's unpack the results with the man himself, Pick n Pay CEO Sean Summers, and find out how far this turnaround has really come. Sean, welcome. You told us at Sarepa that you were actually hours away from a business rescue filing when you returned. And I'm not sure people realize just how close Pick n Pay was to hitting the financial cliff. Looking at these numbers, you've clearly stabilized the patient. How far are we from the recovery ward?
I gave the analogy yesterday. One of your colleagues in the industry, Alec Cox, asked me the question. He said, Sean, you've compared it to climbing Everest. So let's talk about Table Mountain, because we know Table Mountain. Where are you? So I said, we're most probably at the base station. We bought the ticket. Our car's about to leave the base station at the cableway and proceed up the mountain. It's been quite a trek to get to the base station because we've had to deal with a lot of issues to get ourselves to a situation that we can actually pay for the ticket, get in the car and know what the journey is. But we are well aware that there are still some steps and stairs that have to be climbed on the way up, even when one gets off the cable car at the top. Yeah. But, you know, that's the journey we're on, Michael. And, I mean, we know what it is. We know exactly what it looks like. And onwards we go, 1 foot at a time.
So let's continue with that analogy then. When you get off the cable car and you're strapping on your cleats, what are those operating levers that must now deliver the next 600 million swing back to break even? You've said you're going to spend 2.2 billion on CapEx. You've reset 90% of the store estate. So what does that mean? As you know, you're not chasing scale anymore. You're chasing that quality to return to operating profitability. What does that look like?
Correct. So, you know, the fundamental most important thing for us, and it's the same in any business, momentum is always your friend. And the issue for us now is to make sure that we get our level of sales growth ahead of our level of expense growth, which will bring us back and open those jaws again and get back into a positive trajectory. And in order to achieve that, we have to continue to deal with some OPEX operational structures inside the company, which we are dealing with on a daily, weekly, monthly basis as we go forward, and we'll continue to do that over the next year. And then we've got to continue pushing our like-for-like sales growth. The store estate reset is 95% done. I've always been a bit intrigued as to why certain branches of the media are so obsessed with Pick n Pay closing stores. I mean, why on earth would you keep a bad store open? I mean, it doesn't make any sense.
Yeah.
So that's kind of done. So, you know, for us now, it's purely about getting our OPEX expenses in line with where they need to be. And that's twofold. You know, one is the loss of sales on the top line has obviously as a percentage put up some of your fixed cost OPEX. So an improvement again in your top line sales will help deal with that. And then some structural issues. And, you know, that's why we've on the supply chain, we've done a fantastic deal with DP World. And we've completely reconfigured our supply chain, which has been a huge negotiation that's taken place over the last year, 18 months. It was something that I indicated when I first returned that unfortunately that wonderful massive facility that had been built at Eastport was not fit for Pick n Pay. That was built for the wrong company. So we've managed to now get that off our backs and get that out of the way, which is another big step change. So all of these things, Michael, but it just takes time. And I know that that frustrates people. And trust me, it frustrates nobody more than me. But I have to be reasonable. You know, you've got to break some eggs to make the omelet.
Looking at the kind of price, product and customer lens of all of this, and you said at Sarepa that the customer's not stupid. They know when they're being overcharged. Where are you now on price perception versus some of your competitors? And how do you measure that internally?
Well, let's talk about price reality. You know, one of the issues today in this beautiful online world that we live on is that you don't have to go and trawl around the stores to go and do price checks. You can just simply do it in your on your shopping app. But when you look at the independent price surveys that are done, because I'm not interested in us marking our own homework. When you look at the independent price surveys that are done, there was that one that was done by Nedbank now, which found that Pick n Pay was absolutely price competitive in the marketplace, and that we were absolutely equal to everything and anything that's out there. And that is something that we have consciously done over the last 18 months, because our whole pricing philosophy in the company was a little bit back to front. So we revisited that completely. You know, fortunately, my younger days in Pick n Pay, I was a buyer for the first sort of 20, 25 years of my life. I spent buying in Pick n Pay. So it's something that's very close to me. So we've done that. We've dealt with that. We are price competitive. And I liken it to the golf ball. You can't play golf without a golf ball. And if you're not competitive in pricing, you're just not in the game. And we weren't.
Yeah. And if you look at your private label penetration, I think that slipped to around 20% of sales. 30% is kind of the peer average. Do you see that as potentially a missed profit lever?
Totally. We were even less than that. And what we've done is that, again, we've done a complete cleanup on our house brand. So, you know, we had to really butcher before we could start building again. So we've taken a lot of stuff out the company, discontinued, got stuff out that should just ill-conceived. You know, with the best of will at the time, whoever was in charge, a lot of the products and stuff was ill-conceived. We are busy now going to be relaunching the new look 9M brand packaging early in the new year, because that was really the hero brand for us in the company. So you're going to see some really good, solid stuff coming forward on that front. But bearing in mind that Pick n Pay was always branded goods, you know, prices really low. And that's the watermark of retail, is to have a strong relationship and to sell the branded goods, have your house brand, and then obviously fresh. And we've got to get back to being known as the fresh food people again. And it's perhaps that journey that is the most complex.
Yeah. And I also think, you speak of fresh. When I look at the growth of digital and online shopping, it's the one thing I cannot do online. If I'm going to go get fresh, I've got to go and feel and see and have a look for myself, because often the pickers that you get just throw anything in the basket there. So I think there's a big opportunity for you there as well. When you look at Boxer, I mean, just a phenomenal investment. I mean, you shared the story of what was it, 183 odd million, then a couple of more, you know, thrown on, and then a 30 billion rand listing. It's got to be one of the best investments in South Africa's history, next to maybe NSPAS. You've now got public shareholders there. How do you prevent capital allocation drift between the listed Boxer and the turnaround inside Pick n Pay supermarkets?
No, fortunately, I mean, we're very on top of that, because Boxer is so key to us. You know, owning 65% of Boxer, there's still good dividend flow for us. It's highly cash generative. So to some degree, you know, a lot of Boxer's capital requirements, it can generate as well. I mean, we've only got a 40% dividend distribution policy to retain income there inside Boxer for growth. So some will come from Pick n Pay and some will come from within. But again, in Boxer, you know, the job that Marek and his team have done so well is that they are very, very fussy on the selection of stores. One could argue maybe even a little bit too conservative, because when you have a look at the success rates of stores that they open, my Lord, they hardly ever get it wrong. And so their growth runway is there, and they will have more than adequate capital for their needs.
Now, last week you spoke candidly about some bad behavior by some of the lenders in the teeth of this crisis. With the recap complete, have those relationships healed, or do you still sense a structural distrust between banks and retailers' industries?
I don't think it's a structural distrust. You know, as I said to one of the CEOs of one of the lenders that had particularly disappointed afterwards, I said, you know, it helps none for us to have a bad relationship, because we are but baton carriers for a period of time for our institutions that we represent. So, you know, you and I will leave the stage and then there will be new CEOs in place. So really, this is one needs to just learn and move on. The point that I was trying to make to Sarepa and the business rescue industry is that it really is a lot more complex, and it goes way beyond the numbers, because there are always people, livelihoods, institutions, communities that are affected by these situations. And you know, when you're doing business rescue at scale, such as we are doing in Pick n Pay now, it presents a whole host of other complexities. And you know, one of the complexities for me in Pick n Pay is A, we're in the listed environment, so every single step and move that you take is under constant scrutiny. Because we are part and parcel of people's lives, because they shop in our stores, they see everything that we do. So it's really quite a hard situation to actually sort of go about trying to achieve and working towards achieving the goal that one sets. Because it really is like life in the goldfish bowl. You know, everybody sees what you're doing. As I shared, you know, it's amazing. I know we sponsor the Springboks, but it's always analogous to me that when you do go to a rugby game, there's usually 30 idiots on the field and 60,000 geniuses in the grandstand. But I think myself included, I'm in the grandstand.
But I think quite fitting, though, Sean, that you are sponsoring the Springboks, because the Springboks are one of the best turnaround stories we've had in recent memory, with what Russie and Jacques did taking over. And in the depths of the low morale that we saw following the shellacking against the All Blacks. And look at where we are now. You mentioned the people. And I mean, you're talking 92,000 directly affected. And if you use a multiplier very conservatively, it's at least 500,000, probably more. I mean, staff morale must have really been battered through all of this. What are you sensing internally in the organization now as you embark on the next leg?
It certainly was. And, you know, getting your staff morale back up again is clearly at the front of everything that we've really been focusing on in the company. And, you know, you still have instances. And again, you know, people have different pressures. And I think it's sometimes just in general life in society. I mean, I always make a point of when I go around, wherever I go, if I go to the garage to fill my car, go to a restaurant, go to a hotel, airport, a porter, whatever, is to treat people with the utmost respect and dignity, because we do not understand, for a lot of us, the very tough life that the bulk of the people lead in this country. And, you know, humble people coming to work, just trying to make their own life better, trying to make it better for their kids and stuff. And I think that, you know, we need to, in this country, start building again. You know, we've got to start rebuilding the human fabric of this country, because there are such beautiful people in our country, but people that have been so badly let down by poor leadership over a period of time. So it's very, very important that what we do in the turnaround and pick and pay is as much a societal issue as it is a business issue. You know, you need healthy business. You need healthy competition. It's what grows and what makes us better. And you know what I really love about rugby is when they get on the field and you see our friend Russie in the change room before, and Peter Steph in that last little clip that's going around, where they all talk about, you know, technically how they're going to go out and go and handle their opposition. But, you know, after the game, they shake hands, they hug, they have a beer, and they show huge respect for each other. Mm. And it's similar in our business. I have utmost respect for Peter Engelbrecht and the guys in the ShopRite Checkers group. I have utmost respect for the Coppins. I have utmost respect for Woolworths and what they do. And that's what makes our industry better. It's not that they go to work and we don't survive, or vice versa. It's not what it's about. We keep each other and make each other better at the end of the day.
And I know Raymond Ackerman built Pick and Pay on values before value, and it really is that ethos that I hear ringing through what you're saying, Sean. And, you know, sadly, you say let down by poor leadership. And I mean, there's poor leadership in both the private and the public sector, but we, the bulk of South Africans, the poorest of the poor, really feel that lack of leadership, because they rely on public services, be it healthcare, be it education, that are not being delivered at the requisite standard. Fortunately, we got off the FATF grey list. I know you had a guiding hand in forming Business Against Crime as well. What would you like to see from government to meet business halfway to try and better serve the majority of South Africans?
I just think that somehow, and I don't know how, I just think that somehow, we need to get civic society running this country. We need to get it out of the hands of politicians. We know that politicians serve themselves. One only has to look at the outcomes of what goes on and what has gone on. But we need to get South Africa Inc., South Africa Corporate, the provision of water, lights, sanitation, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. We need to get it out of the hands of these damn politicians and put back in the hands of good civic society again.
That was Sean Summers, CEO of Pick and Pay, reflecting on the group's latest results and the long road from crisis to credibility, and the important role that business continues to play in the face of, sadly, poor leadership in the public sector. You're listening to Classic Business.
Classic Business with Michael Avery, sponsored by Alex Forbes, for insight, advice, and impact.